Section 1. Listening. This section of the test has three parts. You will hear three recordings which you'll listen to twice. While listening, answer the questions in the appropriate part of the test. Follow the instructions. When answering questions in the first and second parts, use the answer sheet labelled with a cross. When answering questions in the third part, use the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now prepare the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Part 1. Two interviews. In this part, you will hear two different extracts. In the first extract, you will hear an interview with Margaret Spellings, the former US Secretary of Education. In the second extract, you will hear an interview with Alicia Keys, a popular American singer. For the following statements, 1 to 10, choose the correct answer A, B, C, or D. There is always only one correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part 1. Extract 1. An interview with Margaret Spellings. Margaret Spellings became the US Secretary of Education in 2005. Before becoming Secretary of Education, Spellings served as an assistant to the President for Domestic Policy and helped to create the No Child Left Behind Act. As Secretary of Education, what has been your single greatest accomplishment?
No Child Left Behind, no doubt. This was a US Act of Congress which reauthorized the Elementary and Secondary Act. It included provisions applying to disadvantaged students and set higher standards in education.
Many presidents have called themselves the Education President, but after being elected have done little for education. Is there anything we can do about this?
I am proud to have worked for George Bush when he was running in 2000. He made education a huge part of his campaign. Even during his first day in office, he started working on No Child Left Behind. We worked that entire year to pass the act, and it was his most significant domestic achievement, so he is an education president in my mind.
What can be done to increase the prestige of education as a profession and help convince young people to become teachers?
Well, the good news is that teaching is sought after. Teacher America, the program that takes highly qualified college graduates and asks them to teach for 2 years immediately after college, is one of the most popular recruiting programs on campus. But I think we can pay our teachers more when they get results. I think we can break down barriers and make it less bureaucratic for people who want to teach, whether they are mid-career or just out of college.
Why don't more high schools teach philosophy, business, religion, ethics or political science?
All high schools struggle to offer a well-rounded curriculum. Often our high schools have to teach reading and basic math to help kids who lack basic skills from elementary and middle schools to catch up, which has distracted them from a more rigorous college preparatory curriculum. That is not an excuse. We have to do a better job of helping kids catch up and providing a well-rounded curriculum.
What can be done to prevent students from cutting class?
Students often end up leaving school because they are bored to death. They aren't finding anything interesting, relevant, or they are so behind in basic skills that they are lost. It makes sense. If you can't read the textbook, you're not going to want to show up.
Violence, drugs and alcohol are problems in many schools. Do you think there should be a one strike and you're expelled policy?
This is not within the competence of federal government. These are state policy issues or local school board issues. Parents and local policy makers need to look at these issues and find out what works. They need to look at data before they make decisions. I think we need to go to the root cause and get customised and personalised for each student and ask what it's going to take to prevent those incidents.
Extract 2. An interview with Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys, a Manhattan native, has sold 28 million albums and singles worldwide and won, among other awards, 9 Grammys. Keys is working on her third studio album and looking forward to the opening of her first film, Smokin' Aces, on January the 26th. You founded Keep a Child Alive and are very active in From the Ground Up. Why did you choose those charities?
Well, there are actually 3 charities, Keep a Child Alive, From the Ground Up, and another called Teens in Motion. When I was around 12, it was a huge time in my life that shaped who I am. I like to find organisations that focus on motivating and telling people that you can do it, no matter what your situation. There are so many people out there telling you what you can't do and shouldn't do, as opposed to everything that you can do. All these organisations, in different ways, focus on that, and that's why they are important to me.
Some artists have late-night jam sessions or brainstorm in the car. How do you write your songs?
Well, it's not a clear technique. There's no set way. Sometimes it comes to me like I'm having a conversation and I have to leave for a second because I need to write down my thoughts. Sometimes it's just chords or melodies circling in my head that I don't have words for. And sometimes it's a million words and I have no idea what it's going to be or how it's going to become anything. So there isn't a specific way it happens, and every time I think I know how to do it, I'm shown that I don't. Reading sparks me a lot. When I read, I find I write differently.
In a lot of your writing, you use the term real man. What defines a real man, and how is that different from the Samsonite man you talk about in one of your songs?
That is a great question. I never get asked these good questions when people interview me. So, a real man implies a person who is trustworthy, who is noble, who says what he means and means what he says, and a person who loves. All these things you look for in a person you really know, so there is nothing secret about him, and he is very much a stand-up kind of a person. Samsonite man means a guy who is always packing his bag. He's always leaving. Once you think you understand him, or think you have something, you know, you're wrong. He's always on the run. So that's the difference.
In terms of civil rights and racism, people say that our generation is more accepting than those who came before us. But then some people say it's just surface progress. Where do you think we stand with that today?
I think there is a multifaceted answer. In many ways, yes, look how far we have come. How far we've come when we can be sitting in the same room together, enjoying a conversation with no issues, no tension. You know what I mean? I think of the workplace, I think of school, I think of those places that at one time were segregated. Now we are able to have friends in a million shade of every colour, and I think that is pretty incredible. We've absolutely come far. At the same time, I think we have come so far that we are actually going backwards because we almost take it for granted. And since we don't know where we've come from and what those before us had to go through and deal with, we are a little ignorant of it. I don't know how much open communication we have with those who are older.
Can you describe the process of turning your songs into a video? Do you have a lot of input?
Definitely, that's my thing. Usually because I wrote the song, I have a story of where it came from. I talk to key people about that story, and then we get a director, and they have a vision, and they write out what is called a treatment, and summarise what the video could be about. From there, I'll ask, can we add this, or change that, or is there anything else we could do to make it better? So that's the first step, and once we have it all together, we have a basic outline of what we will do. Then I get a whole group of people together, a stylist and set designer and makeup person, and determine the feeling.
Now listen again. Extract 1, an interview with Margaret Spellings. Margaret Spellings became the US Secretary of Education in 2005. Before becoming Secretary of Education, Spellings served as an assistant to the President for Domestic Policy and helped to create the No Child Left Behind Act. As Secretary of Education, what has been your single greatest accomplishment?
No Child Left Behind, no doubt. This was a US Act of Congress which reauthorised the Elementary and Secondary Act. It included provisions applying to disadvantaged students and set higher standards in education.
Many presidents have called themselves the education president, but after being elected have done little for education. Is there anything we can do about this?
I am proud to have worked for George Bush when he was running in 2000. He made education a huge part of his campaign. Even during his first day in office, he started working on No Child Left Behind. We worked that entire year to pass the act, and it was his most significant domestic achievement, so he is an education president in my mind.
What can be done to increase the prestige of education as a profession and help convince young people to become teachers?
Well, the good news is that teaching is sought after. Teacher America, the programme that takes highly qualified college graduates and asks them to teach for 2 years immediately after college, is one of the most popular recruiting programmes on campus. But I think we can pay our teachers more when they get results. I think we can break down barriers and make it less bureaucratic for people who want to teach, whether they are mid-career or just out of college.
Why don't more high schools teach philosophy, business, religion, ethics or political science?
All high schools struggle to offer a well-rounded curriculum. Often our high schools have to teach reading and basic math to help kids who lack basic skills from elementary and middle schools to catch up, which has distracted them from a more rigorous college preparatory curriculum. That is not an excuse. We have to do a better job of helping kids catch up and providing a well-rounded curriculum.
What can be done to prevent students from cutting class?
Students often end up leaving school because they are bored to death. They aren't finding anything interesting, relevant, or they are so behind in basic skills that they are lost. It makes sense. If you can't read the textbook, you're not going to want to show up.
Violence, drugs and alcohol are problems in many schools. Do you think there should be a one strike and you're expelled policy?
This is not within the competence of federal government. These are state policy issues or local school board issues. Parents and local policy makers need to look at these issues and find out what works. They need to look at data before they make decisions. I think we need to go to the root cause and get customised and personalised for each student and ask what it's going to take to prevent those incidents.
Extract 2, an interview with Alicia Keys. Alicia Keys, a Manhattan native, has sold 28 million albums and singles worldwide and won, among other awards, 9 Grammys. Keys is working on her third studio album and looking forward to the opening of her first film, Smokin' Aces, on January the 26th. You founded Keep a Child Alive and are very active in From the Ground Up. Why did you choose those charities?
Well, there are actually 3 charities, Keep a Child Alive, From the Ground Up, and another called Teens in Motion. When I was around 12, it was a huge time in my life that shaped who I am. I like to find organisations that focus on motivating and telling people that you can do it, no matter what your situation. There are so many people out there telling you what you can't do and shouldn't do, as opposed to everything that you can do. All these organisations, in different ways, focus on that, and that's why they are important to me.
Some artists have late-night jam sessions or brainstorm in the car. How do you write your songs?
Well, it's not a clear technique. There's no set way. Sometimes it comes to me like I'm having a conversation and I have to leave for a second because I need to write down my thoughts. Sometimes it's just chords or melodies circling in my head that I don't have words for. And sometimes it's a million words and I have no idea what it's going to be or how it's going to become anything. So there isn't a specific way it happens. And every time I think I know how to do it, I'm shown that I don't. Reading sparks me a lot. When I read, I find I write differently.
In a lot of your writing, you use the term real man. What defines a real man, and how is that different from the Samsonite man you talk about in one of your songs?
That is a great question. I never get asked these good questions when people interview me. So, a real man implies a person who is trustworthy, who is noble, who says what he means and means what he says, and a person who loves. All these things you look for in a person you really know, so there is nothing secret about him, and he is very much a stand-up kind of a person. Samsonite man means a guy who is always packing his bag. He's always leaving. Once you think you understand him, or think you have something, you know, you're wrong. He's always on the run. So that's the difference.
In terms of civil rights and racism, people say that our generation is more accepting than those who came before us. But then some people say it's just surface progress. Where do you think we stand with that today?
I think there is a multifaceted answer. In many ways, yes, look how far we have come. How far we've come when we can be sitting in the same room together, enjoying a conversation with no issues, no tension. You know what I mean? I think of the workplace. I think of school. I think of those places that at one time were segregated. Now we are able to have friends in a million shade of every colour, and I think that is pretty incredible. We've absolutely come far. At the same time, I think we have come so far that we are actually going backwards because we almost take it for granted. And since we don't know where we've come from and what those before us had to go through and deal with, we are a little ignorant of it. I don't know how much open communication we have with those who are older.
Can you describe the process of turning your songs into a video? Do you have a lot of input?
Definitely. That's my thing. Usually because I wrote the song, I have a story of where it came from. I talk to key people about that story, and then we get a director, and they have a vision, and they write out what is called a treatment and summarise what the video could be about. From there, I'll ask, can we add this or change that? Or is there anything else we could do to make it better? So that's the first step, and once we have it all together, we have a basic outline of what we will do. Then I get a whole group of people together, a stylist and set designer and makeup person, and determine the feeling.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Part 2. 5 life-changing skills everyone can learn in less than 6 months. In this part, you will hear a lecturer talking about 5 life-changing skills everyone can learn in the next 6 months. The lecturer will mention 5 life-changing skills which will have a positive impact on your life. He will also mention 5 sources where you can start learning. There are 2 blocks of 5 matching questions. You will have to match all 10 questions while you are listening to this recording. Read the questions carefully before you listen. For questions 11 to 15, choose from the first list marked A to H, a life-changing skill a person can learn within 6 months. For questions 16 to 20, choose from the second list marked A to H, a source where a person can start learning. Be careful. For each block of questions, there are 3 extra possibilities which you do not need to use. There is always only 1 correct answer. Mark your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a cross. Now you have 2 minutes to read the tasks. Now listen to part two.
Skill number one. Bill Gates has been known to state that if he had one superpower, it would be the ability to read faster. What Bill and the rest of the mega-successful understand is that knowledge is power. The ability to process information faster from books, articles, and reports is what will help you learn faster and therefore improve each aspect of your life faster as well. Where to get started learning? Courses to speed up the pace of your reading skills are becoming more popular as more people realize how important it is with the limited time we have. You can check out free courses, or you can start learning how to use Spritzlet, which allows you to read articles online faster with a browser extension. Skill number two. Research shows that people fear public speaking more than other things. There's something terrifying about being in front of dozens or hundreds of people and exposing yourself completely. It's when you're most vulnerable, but learning how to speak in public is a life changer. Warren Buffett, an American business magnate, has given advice to recent graduates that the number one skill you can have to succeed is public speaking skills. Everything from communication, confidence, and sales is developed when you develop your public speaking skills. Where to get started learning? Luckily, there are great communities out there like Toastmasters that organize local meetups all around the world. You'll find amazing public speakers who are looking to get to the next level and even beginners who are just getting started. Skill number three. If you're looking to get into business, accounting is one of the core fundamentals you'll need in order to succeed. While you don't need to be an expert, you definitely should understand the basics. This skill can also be used to manage your personal finances, to meet your financial goals, and to have more control over your life. Where to get started learning? If you didn't learn this skill in school, no worries. You can either teach yourself using books or check out free courses online. Skill number four. Most people hearing this probably have a basic understanding of Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. While this is a good start, there are so many powerful functionalities that are hidden which could make your life a lot easier. Excel is also a great asset to have whether you're looking for a job, as many corporations rely on Excel to organize and manage multiple parts of the business. Where to get started learning. With the popularity of Excel, you can find tons of free resources and videos online to learn. Skill number five. Blogging is a powerful tool if you want to spread your ideas, build your brand, or grow your business. Since it was introduced, blogging has taken on a life of its own. Bloggers update their blogs on a regular basis. The most common rate of updating is 2 to 3 times per week. On the whole, Corporate bloggers tend to update their blog more frequently than other types of bloggers, with 29% reporting that they updated their blog at least 5 times a day. Where to get started learning? Anyone can start blogging today. Personally, I think the best way to start learning how to blog is to just start writing. There are techniques you can learn on how to promote your blog, but the best way to grow your blog is to write great content.
Now listen again.
Skill number one. Bill Gates has been known to state that if he had one superpower, it would be the ability to read faster. What Bill and the rest of the mega-successful understand is that knowledge is power. The ability to process information faster from books, articles, and reports is what will help you learn faster and therefore improve each aspect of your life faster as well. Where to get started learning? Courses to speed up the pace of your reading skills are becoming more popular as more people realize how important it is with the limited time we have. You can check out free courses or you can start learning how to use Spritzlet, which allows you to read articles online faster with a browser extension. Skill number two. Research shows that people fear public speaking more than other things. There's something terrifying about being in front of dozens or hundreds of people and exposing yourself completely. It's when you're most vulnerable, but learning how to speak in public is a life changer. Warren Buffett, an American business magnate, has given advice to recent graduates that the number one skill you can have to succeed is public speaking skills. Everything from communication, confidence, and sales is developed when you develop your public speaking skills. Where to get started learning? Luckily, there are great communities out there like Toastmasters that organize local meetups all around the world. You'll find amazing public speakers who are looking to get to the next level and even beginners who are just getting started. Skill number three. If you're looking to get into business, accounting is one of the core fundamentals you'll need in order to succeed. While you don't need to be an expert, you definitely should understand the basics. This skill can also be used to manage your personal finances, to meet your financial goals, and to have more control over your life. Where to get started learning? If you didn't learn this skill in school, no worries. You can either teach yourself using books or check out free courses online. Skill number four. Most people hearing this probably have a basic understanding of Microsoft Excel spreadsheet. While this is a good start, there are so many powerful functionalities that are hidden which could make your life a lot easier. Excel is also a great asset to have whether you're looking for a job, as many corporations rely on Excel to organize and manage multiple parts of the business. Where to get started learning? With the popularity of Excel, you can find tons of free resources and videos online to learn. Skill number five. Blogging is a powerful tool if you want to spread your ideas, build your brand, or grow your business. Since it was introduced, blogging has taken on a life of its own. Bloggers update their blogs on a regular basis. The most common rate of updating is 2 to 3 times per week. On the whole, corporate bloggers tend to update their blog more frequently than other types of bloggers, with 29% reporting that they updated their blog at least 5 times a day. Where to get started learning? Anyone can start blogging today. Personally, I think the best way to start learning how to blog is to just start writing. There are techniques you can learn on how to promote your blog, but the best way to grow your blog is to write great content.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. Now look at part 3. For part 3, you will need the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Please find and prepare it. Part 3. Exciting travel. You will hear an exciting story of life-changing travel. Complete the sentences 21 to 30 which summarise the information from the text. Use 1 or 2 words in your answers. The number of words is indicated in brackets. To complete some of the sentences, you may have to use word forms different from those you heard in the recording. Write your answers on the answer sheet labelled with a pen. Now you have 2 minutes to read the sentences. Now listen to part three.
You will hear an exciting story of life-changing travel, which will be told by Yawande Amatoso, a South African novelist.
As a child, I dreamed of many things, but climbing Kilimanjaro was not one of them. So when my friend Juanita asked me to join her, I only agreed to go along for moral support. As well as me, she asked 5 other mutual friends, and soon we were a team, training on Saturday and Sunday mornings in the cold Cape Town winter, rising in the dark, walking through the grey and the rain. Somewhere amidst the training, confirming our tickets and buying and borrowing the seemingly endless list of what we needed, Juanita's mission became my own. I started to look forward to the challenge, although with hindsight, I had no idea how difficult it would be. We flew to Tanzania, arrived at night and caught a shuttle to our hotel in Moshi. We packed our bags, preparing ourselves for the 3-day climb ahead. At first I found settling into the walk easy. I discovered the strange magic of the mountain and the peace of walking with friends for hours and hours in simple silence. I embraced the quiet and the wide landscape. Although we'd all been friends before, on the climb we became even closer. At dinner, we bonded by reporting in detail any coughs or snivels, taking each other's temperatures and sympathising with each other's bodily aches. This was important as one of our team, Fred, was carried down the mountain on a stretcher after being diagnosed with altitude sickness. His departure reminded us of the dangerous nature of our climb, and another in the group, Sadia, started having second thoughts. The rest of us encouraged her to stay. It's funny what people do on mountain tops. On the 3rd day, I came across a yellow blossom and for no logical reason thought of my mother who had passed away several years before. Up until this moment, the hike had been deeply pleasurable. Even the steep climbs had been bearable. But now snow had fallen and all around us was an eerie blue whiteness. Hours into this final climb, I knew I was tired in such a way that no amount of rest could ease. I walked with Bahar and we developed our own pace of a footstep every 2 seconds. It felt like walking through tar. I wanted to stop, but I couldn't. I had to complete what I'd begun. I quietly acknowledged that my physical preparation was insufficient and realised I would need to draw on mental strength to keep going. I focused on my breathing. The walk seemed endless. Almost 8 hours later, I reached the very top. My tears were of exhaustion, but also pride that I finally reached my aim, regardless of how impossible each step had felt. I suddenly noticed daylight had come, and everywhere was white and stark with an exquisite glacier hanging off the side of a cliff like a tenacious claw. We'd done it. These days, I think of Kilimanjaro with a deep fondness for the moments I shared with friends. It was a test of endurance I will always remember.
Now listen again.
You will hear an exciting story of life-changing travel, which will be told by Yawande Amatoso, a South African novelist.
As a child, I dreamed of many things, but climbing Kilimanjaro was not one of them. So when my friend Juanita asked me to join her, I only agreed to go along for moral support. As well as me, she asked five other mutual friends, and soon we were a team, training on Saturday and Sunday mornings in the cold Cape Town winter, rising in the dark, walking through the grey and the rain. Somewhere amidst the training, confirming our tickets and buying and borrowing the seemingly endless list of what we needed, Juanita's mission became my own. I started to look forward to the challenge, although with hindsight, I had no idea how difficult it would be. We flew to Tanzania, arrived at night and caught a shuttle to our hotel in Moshi. We packed our bags, preparing ourselves for the three-day climb ahead. At first, I found settling into the walk easy. I discovered the strange magic of the mountain and the peace of walking with friends for hours and hours in simple silence. I embraced the quiet and the wide landscape. Although we'd all been friends before, on the climb we became even closer. At dinner, we bonded by reporting in detail any coughs or snivels, taking each other's temperatures and sympathising with each other's bodily aches. This was important as one of our team, Fred, was carried down the mountain on a stretcher after being diagnosed with altitude sickness. His departure reminded us of the dangerous nature of our climb, and another in the group, Sadia, started having second thoughts. The rest of us encouraged her to stay. It's funny what people do on mountain tops. On the third day, I came across a yellow blossom and for no logical reason thought of my mother who had passed away several years before. Up until this moment, the hike had been deeply pleasurable. Even the steep climbs had been bearable. But now snow had fallen and all around us was an eerie blue whiteness. Hours into this final climb, I knew I was tired in such a way that no amount of rest could ease. I walked with Bahar and we developed our own pace of a footstep every 2 seconds. It felt like walking through tar. I wanted to stop, but I couldn't. I had to complete what I'd begun. I quietly acknowledged that my physical preparation was insufficient and realised I would need to draw on mental strength to keep going. I focused on my breathing. The walk seemed endless. Almost 8 hours later, I reached the very top. My tears were of exhaustion, but also pride that I finally reached my aim, regardless of how impossible each step had felt. I suddenly noticed daylight had come, and everywhere was white and stark with an exquisite glacier hanging off the side of a cliff like a tenacious claw. We'd done it. These days, I think of Kilimanjaro with a deep fondness for the moments I shared with friends. It was a test of endurance I will always remember.
Now you have 30 more seconds to complete the tasks. The listening section is now over. Please stop working on this section. Now go on to the next sections of the test.